Okay, guys, we're going to go ahead and get started. I'd like to welcome everybody on today's conference call. Bear with me during this call. I put together a lot of notes pretty much over the past 12 hours, but the reason for the call was really just to kind of give everybody an update on what's going on, what we're doing here at Sard Wealth Management Group for your portfolios, and try to put some perspective along with what is going on. I was actually going to hold a call, believe it or not, last week, not knowing that the downgrade was going to be occurring, of course, late Friday. My intention was going to be to do one last week. I had waited on it and was looking to do one possibly Thursday of this week. But once the news of the downgrade came out, I said, let's just go ahead and hold one immediately, since I'm sure this is on everybody's mind. What I've done for this call is I really just set up my own Q&A. I know many of you have called in or you've emailed in with some questions or concerns, and what I've done was I took a lot of those questions, I wrote them down on a sheet of paper, and I've provided an answer to those. So I'm going to run through these questions. I will then answer them, and then when I'm done, I'll go ahead and open it up for Q&A. All right, my first question that I've been receiving, what are my thoughts on the downgrade? The truth is, everybody, that this really doesn't come as a surprise, as they've been discussing this for quite some time now. For those of you that have been a client of ours for at least the last 9 months, which is most of you on the call, I've been talking about this for many, many months. Our December 7th conference call that we held, this was right after the election, was when they were talking about all of the possible tax law changes. On that call, the second point that I made was, let's hope the politicians don't put their political philosophies ahead of our well-being. The next point that I made was, my opinion, Jonathan Sard, is that balanced government is good, but only when people are willing to talk. Gridlock may not be good when people aren't willing to talk or compromise, and of course we have huge issues to deal with, and we can't wait much longer because we have very hard choices to make. Those were my comments on my December call. We then held a quarterly conference call on April 21st. By the way, all these are recorded and on our website. About 3 minutes into that conference call, I reminded everybody that the S&P just put us to negative watch from stable. This was back in April. And that I felt that their outlook could force Congress to take action. I also reminded everybody that there is this overhang and this debate about the debt ceiling, but hopefully Congress will be listening to what S&P had said. We now fast forward and we know, unfortunately, that the politicians seemingly were not listening particularly well as to what S&P was saying, and of course now they went ahead and downgraded our debt, but keep in mind they only downgraded our long-term debt. They did not downgrade our short-term debt. Also remember that Moody's and Fitch, which are two other rating services, have still not downgraded our debt. So it is only S&P. John Chambers, the chairman of the S&P, says that five countries have lost their AAA rating and later got it back, and that it took anywhere from 9 to 18 months to do so. Now, I'm going to put on my arrogant American hat right now and say, well, none of those countries were the U.S. So I genuinely believe that if there is a country that's going to get their AAA rating back, it's going to be us. It's just going to take a while for it to happen. As I've said for the past 2 years, it took us a long time to get into this mess. It's going to take us a long time to get out. I really think that had Congress come to an agreement in a more civilized way a little bit earlier, where the cuts would have been more extensive than $1.5 to $2.5 trillion, the downgrade perhaps would not have happened. But this is where we are right now. Even though the White House apparently found a $2 trillion error in the calculations made by S&P, that still did not alter their decision to downgrade. They ultimately chalked it up to the budget deal recently put forth in Congress, along with the problems Congress was having trying to put the deal together. S&P was really looking for a deal that was closer to about $4.5 to $5 trillion or so, and obviously that did not happen. Now, what's really interesting about all of this, you know, all the fear that is out there, my goodness, our debt was downgraded by S&P. Well, if people were so worried and are so worried about our debt being downgraded, then why is it that the 10-year bond is rallying? And it's not rallying a little bit. When I started putting my notes together this morning, the 10-year bond, as the close of Friday, was about 2.56%. When I started putting my notes together, it was at 2.47%. 10-year bond is now at 2.36%. Somebody out there thinks the U.S. Treasury market's a pretty good risk. So it looks as though many Americans, by the way, including Warren Buffett, still look at the U.S. as a safe haven. Also keep in mind, and you know, I'm not suggesting that this is necessarily a good thing, but keep in mind that the U.S. can print money. As long as Congress will allow that to happen, the U.S. is not going to default. We have our own currency. Countries like Greece don't have that luxury. They can, in fact, default. They do not have their own currency right now. So keep in mind, this downgrade was only for long-term bonds, and it was only made by S&P, not by Moody's, not by Fitch. And the bond market, or investors around the world, still think the U.S. Treasury market is a pretty good place to be by virtue of the fact that bonds are really, really rallying today. I'm looking at my notes here from my April 21st conference call. Many people probably don't remember this, but the 10-year bond back then was at 3.39%. Yields have come down almost 30% in just roughly 4 months. So the demand for U.S. Treasuries remain high. How long will that be the case? That's anybody's guess. It might be a year, 2 years, but it certainly won't go on indefinitely. At some point, the market is going to turn on the bond market if we don't get our fiscal house in order. So my thoughts, again, on the downgrade, certainly we wish it of course didn't happen, but maybe this is the push and the jolt that we need to begin to really get our house in order. Some of the conversation that's come out of Washington has been frustrating for all of us to listen to, but at least these conversations have been going on. I mean, at least we've been having the conversation for the better part of 6 months. Is this 2008 all over again? Is another question that I have gotten and I'm sure is on the minds of many of you. And the short answer, as far as I'm concerned, as of today, August the 8th, is no. I don't think that to be the case. Here are some major differences between now and then. Number one, real estate has already been hit very, very hard. And I have said for about the past 12 months, I think real estate is in the bottoming process. This is a process, though, that will take many, many years. There could still be more downside in the housing market, but I think most of the downside that we've seen in real estate is now behind us. Not to say we're going to be going up. Again, I've been saying this for 2 years now. We got a long way to go. But the real estate market today is in a much different position than it was just 3 years ago. Banks are by no means strong, but they are in much stronger positions today than they were 3 years ago when they were really on the brink of collapse. Corporate balance sheets are in very, very good shape. And the market is cheaper today from a valuation standpoint than it was in 2008. Now, I'm not suggesting that the market is cheap, because I don't think that that is the case. But it is cheaper today than it was then. And I've been making that point for the better part of the year, that while I don't think the market is cheap, hey, you know, the market can continue to go up and stay overvalued for an extended period of time. Most of you know that I have been more bearish than bullish over the past 18 months for reasons we are seeing play out right now. We don't really have a lot of good choices. When we had that 09 run-up, most of you participated in that. Beginning of 2010, I began to get really cautious in all of your portfolios. And 2010, that decision for most of the year was, I think, a smart one. When we had a year ago at this time, let me back up, a year ago at this time, believe it or not, the market year to date was down about as much as it is year to date right now. We were down about 6% or so a year ago at this time. We had just come off that huge, huge correction of 17%. But then at the end of August, Ben Bernanke announced his quantitative easing program, and for the next 2 months, the market shot up like a rocket. So I don't think that this is 2008 all over again. I do think, though, that the risk to the downside is certainly still there. We don't know how far the market will go down from here. Nobody knows. Another 10%, another 20%, certainly plausible. I will get a little bit more excited as an investor from a valuation standpoint if we see the market go down to about 950 to 1,000. Now, hopefully none of your jaws dropped. That's about a 15 to 18% decline from these levels. But again, most of you on the call, virtually all of you on the call, are in a pretty defensive position right now in your portfolios. So we're certainly in a period right now where we're protecting capital, which will afford us the opportunity to put money to work when things seem a little bit more attractive. So to answer the question I'm getting, no, I don't think this is 2008 all over again. Can the market continue to go down 10, 20% from here? Of course it can, but I don't think that we're going to see what happened in 08 unfold right now, at least not as of August the 8th, 2011. Next question. John, is this ever going to end? Yeah, in a word. I believe it will end, but it's going to take time and patience and an understanding of the problems that we face. You can go back and listen to any conference call I've held over the past 2 years, and pretty much everything I've been saying during that time is unchanged. My thoughts have unchanged. I've been particularly more cautious over the past 18 months. I continue to be even more cautious at this juncture. I believe it will end. It's going to take time, it's going to take patience, and it is going to take leadership and the will of our political leaders to make the hard decisions that have to be made. Obviously, they didn't really make the hard decisions when they were dealing with the debt ceiling. I'll get into that, though, a little bit more in just a couple of minutes. So will this ever end? Yes, I do believe that it will. Again, it's just going to take some time. John, what about gold? What do I think of gold? Well, keep in mind that most of you already own some gold indirectly through the commodity fund that you own, but it's really also important to understand that gold and precious metals can be very, very volatile, and they're not for the faint of heart. It's hard to see that, of course, when it is going up, just like it was hard to see the risk of owning tech stocks in the late 90s and real estate in the middle part of the decade. Tech stocks went up for years and years. People didn't see any risk in it because it kept going down. We only see the risk in something when the price comes back down again. Same thing with real estate. The word was, hey, it's real estate. You know, they're not making any more of it. Real estate really doesn't come down in this country, does it? Well, of course it does. Precious metals, I am certainly not opposed to owning precious metals. I think precious metals and gold is a relatively good place to be, as long as there's an understanding of the risk associated with it. When the market hit its downturn in 2008, gold was down double digits. We had a correction in silver of roughly 30% just a few months ago. Silver was trading at about $50. It came all the way back down to about $32 or so. So precious metal stock can be very, very volatile, and we can't lose sight of that. So, again, what do I think of gold? I don't mind gold. Many of you already own some gold within the commodity fund, but it can be very volatile. It's hard to place a valuation on gold. In fact, it's impossible because gold is not a company. It doesn't have earnings. It doesn't pay a dividend. It's just a metal. It's just a yellow metal. So those are my thoughts on gold. Could we see a correction in gold? Oh, boy, absolutely. Absolutely, and that would be quite normal to see a pullback in gold at these levels. It's had a parabolic run here over the past couple of weeks, so I think we need to be prepared for at least some type of a pullback in gold. Next question, do I think we're going to have a double dip? In a word, I have always thought that we were going to be having a double dip in relatively short order. I actually thought it was probably going to be around the third quarter of last year. We did avoid it, partially because in hindsight it turned out to be, number one, a soft patch in the economy last summer, but also with the announcement of QE2, we were able to avoid that double-dip recession. I have thought since the credit crisis started back now 3 years ago that we will be entering a period of slow growth and higher long-term unemployment, quote-unquote, that new normal, that will just lend itself to a greater likelihood of more recessions. Remember a year ago, and I've talked about this before, we had a 17% correction in the summer last year, and we were very defensive, we being Sard Wealth Management. In your portfolios, we were very defensive because of the fear of that dip, of that double dip. So what happened at the end of August? The market, again, at the time, a year ago, was down 6%. September, after the announcement of QE2, had the best month of September it had in over 70 years. October was then a good month as well. Now, here we are, August the 8th, and believe it or not, they started the bond purchases around November of last year. The market is basically in the same place it is today as it was then. So do I think we'll have a double dip? I put it at over 50% that we will. But again, I have thought that the risk of recession has been high for quite some time, which is why I've had more of a defensive bearish stance in your portfolios over the past year or so than a more offensive or bullish stance. Next question, as a result of what we are seeing, do I think we'll have a QE3? Well, I certainly hope we don't. As I just said, since the Fed started buying bonds last year, since they actually started buying the bonds, market is basically flat. Now, it's a little higher from the time that they actually made the announcement of QE2, but not all that much, and it really just doesn't seem as though we have gotten the bang for the buck to the tune of $600 billion. So I hope they don't do a QE3. You never know what they're going to come out with. I really have to question and wonder, though, what the market reaction will be if they do a QE3. I don't think that we would see that huge pop that we saw when they announced QE2. We could see perhaps a short-term pop if they announced QE3, but I don't think that we would see that long sustained increase that we saw like we did towards the end of last year. Now, because I speak to virtually all of you so often and on such a regular basis, and we really do have such great relationships with all of you, I get a question from many of you saying, John, you know, what would you do to fix our problems? Well, as you all know, I'm not an economist, and I'm certainly not a politician. And I've discussed our problems for a very long time with all of you, and I think that the ideas that came out of the Simpson-Bowles committee, just to me, it just made some sense. I talked about this in our December conference call. Their broad analysis was that, look, we need broad spending cuts. We need to reform entitlements. We need to reform our tax code and broaden the tax base, which will include some increased revenue. Basically, we need a period of time where we're going to have some short-term pain, but for the benefit of getting some long-term gain. So short-term pain for long-term gain. Of course, what we need is some leadership from the White House and a nonpartisan dialogue within Congress. Many of you may realize or may not realize that Obama and Boehner were apparently pretty close to about a $4.5 trillion deal not long ago. But unfortunately, the people on Obama's side, his constituencies, really didn't want to touch entitlements. And the Republicans, unfortunately, didn't really want to mess with any kind of tax increase or revenue increase. So it seemed as though the two leaders were really getting pretty close to a deal amongst themselves, but then leaders underneath them from both parties were unwilling to agree and compromise. And we all know, look, both sides are going to have to compromise. So maybe the S&P, for all their flaws over the past 5 years, I mean, my goodness, sometimes we have to take what they say with a grain of salt after all. Perhaps they've done us a favor here now, you know, really absolutely forcing us to put our house in order. Again, I continue to be short-term cautious, as we have been for the better part of 12 to 18 months after the big run-up of 2009, but I also continue to be a long-term optimist. I genuinely believe that we can be setting ourselves up here if we don't continue to see any asset bubbles, which could be driven by higher deficit spending and some crazy policies out of the Fed, if we don't continue to see that, and we do make the tough choices, and we do experience some short-term pain by reforming entitlement, Social Security, Medicare, cutting some spending on the defense side, maybe raising some revenue as well, that we get our fiscal house in order, and boy, we could be looking at the backside of this decade or maybe even around 2020, and boy, oh boy, I mean, we could be really setting ourselves up for something great going forward. So in the short term, again, nothing has really changed from my lens and from my chair, and I continue to be very optimistic over the long term. Another very big question, I've left this question for the last one, because all of y'all are thinking of, what are we doing and what have we been doing in your portfolios? Very good question. Again, many of you know the last 18 months we've had a lot of ups and downs. This time last year, most of you were thrilled that we were very defensive in your portfolios. When that correction occurred, you know, we were down a few percent, no big deal, but the market was down almost 10. There was some frustration on my end when they announced QE2 and the market just went up like a rocket in September and October, because we were left a little bit behind during that time because we continued to be fairly defensive because of all of the risk and concerns that were out there. We've been a bit more active, as many of you have seen, in your portfolios over the past 6 months, because I've been trying to position the portfolios to participate a little bit more in some of the gains that we had seen, but then in also trying to get out of the way in some of the slides that we have seen. We've really been in somewhat of a trendless market for about the past 7 months. I believe it was back in March or so, when it looked as though we were really going to break out to new highs. There was a lot of optimism. The technical indicators of the market were fairly strong. The fundamentals of the economy were fairly strong. Earnings were absolutely terrific. The economy was growing. Unemployment was still certainly a problem, but there were some fairly constructive signs. So we added a little bit of risk, not a lot, again, because deep down I was still fairly cautious, but we added a little bit of risk. We then unloaded a little bit of risk a couple of months later, and then in June, right in the middle of June, so just 2 months ago, we got rid of about 8 to 10% of our equity positions for most of our clients. Now, at the time, I think many of you just said, okay, John, yeah, if that's what you think we need to do, that's what we need to do. I also think there were some of you that were very relieved by that, and some of you said, boy, really? We're getting more defensive? Huh, okay, well, that's kind of interesting. Because, of course, 2 weeks later, the market had one of its best weeks that it had had in years. I mean, the market was up 5% in 1 week, so I think people were probably scratching their heads saying, oh, bummer, man, I sure wish we got more defensive at the end of June instead of the middle of June. And by the way, in hindsight, so do I. But fortunately, we did get more defensive then. So that turned out to be a positive. Also, just to let you know, we got more defensive on Friday. Now, the only people on this call that will probably know that right now are those of you that go in to look at your account on Streetscape every day, because you would not have gotten your trade confirmation statements yet. But what we did on Friday was, for our really, really conservative clients, we sold off another 5% of the equity position there. For our more moderate clients, which are a majority of you on the line, we sold off another 10% of our equity position, bringing us all the way down to about 27% in pure equity and about 7% in what's called hybrid funds. So we are very, very defensive right now, having basically less than a third of the account exposed to the equity market, which, what does that mean? That means two-thirds is not exposed to the equity market. Now, unfortunately, as we all know, the market never rings a bell, and it's only in hindsight that we will know what the ultimate outcome is going to be. The market doesn't ring a bell saying, okay, you know, now's the time to sell, or okay, now's the time to buy. This is what makes investing so challenging, and this is what has made the last 6 to 7 months so challenging. But I have to say, now as we stand here on August the 8th and I look at our client portfolios and see where they're positioned, I'm very happy with that. Happy that we've been a little bit more defensive for most of the year. Happy we got more defensive in the middle of June. Happy we got more defensive on Friday. Some of you might be wondering, okay, John, we got more defensive, but why aren't we just all in cash? You know, why don't we just move everything to cash? And I understand that. But the reality is you just don't know when the market is going to turn. You don't know when it will turn for a longer period of time. And you don't know when you're going to get a bounce, and it turns out just to be a short-term bounce. So if we went all cash, what will end up happening is at some point when we were to get more aggressive, it would only come on the heels of having some type of major increase in the market. Because, again, the market doesn't ring a bell. So if we went to all cash and we're all sitting there and we're all feeling a little bit better now because we don't have to worry about the market going down, what's going to happen then is after the market rallies 3, 5, 7, 8%, who knows how much it will have to rally for my indicators to turn positive, both on a technical and fundamental side, we would have already missed out on that turn in the market. So I think it still makes sense to have some exposure in equities, because then you'll be participating during that time when the market rebounds. But I certainly don't think it makes sense to be overly aggressive at a time like this, or for the past 8 months for that matter, which is why we have been much more defensive in virtually all of your portfolios during that time. Again, buying low and selling high is very, very hard because, as I just said, the market doesn't ring a bell. And when the market is low, the news is usually very bad. And when the market is high, the news is usually very, very good. I've liked our positioning for most of the year this year. Even though we weren't participating in all the gains earlier in the year, I still like our positioning now as the market goes down, because we'll be able to deploy more capital when the opportunity presents itself. And rest assured, trust me, the opportunity will present itself again. Who wanted to buy this market in February and March of 2009? I mean, goodness, nobody out there. You know, that's at the depth of despair. But in hindsight, it turned out to be the bottom. I'm not suggesting this is the bottom right now, because if it was, I wouldn't have gotten more defensive on Friday. So we could still see more declines here. And if we do, that's okay, because we're fairly defensively positioned. So we are much more in a protect mode right now than we are in an advance mode. So hopefully that will put everybody's mind at ease. Now, although most of you know, and I've stated already, that I've been, you know, somewhat bearish on things because of the financial mess that we've created in this country over the past 30 years, I do want to end it with some positive notes here. Okay, because there really are some good things happening here, and we've seen them over the course of the past 12 months or so. Companies are making a pile of money. They are doing well financially. Their balance sheets look absolutely terrific. We created 117,000 jobs last month. Not too bad. Not great, but not awful. The real estate market is bottoming. It's going to take a long time, but it's not where it was 3 or 4 years ago. We still have very low interest rates. And oh, by the way, the market is still up about 75%. Let me repeat that, 75% from the lows of 2009. So hitting a rough patch should be expected. Thought we were hitting that rough patch last summer. It looks as though we're obviously probably hitting it right now. But we have to understand that markets don't go up continuously. We are defensive in your portfolios. We'll continue to be so until the opportunities and or the market valuations begin to look more attractive. We are not in a position right now to buy this dip. As I said before, I would prefer to go ahead and protect capital right now. I sent out the weekly market the market commentary is in the process of being approved by compliance, so it's going to be going out hopefully shortly. But it was a little bit longer than most of the ones that I send out on Monday. And you know, some interesting statistics that are in there. Since 1900, on average, we average about one decline per year of 10% or more, which I think is remarkable. Now, you're not going to get that every year. It's just an average. Kind of like when people say, well, the market averages 10% per year. Well, going back to 1926, the market has only had 6 years where it actually returned between 8 and 12%. So these are just averages. But since 1900, we get a 10% decline or more on average once a year. We've had a correction of a little bit more than 10% since 1962. Just over the last 48 years, we've had 25 declines of 10% or more. And only 9 of those times did it result in a downturn of more than 20%. So again, we've seen that before. Would it shock me if we had a decline of more than 20% during this period? No, of course it would not shock me. Again, due to market valuations, due to the economy really showing some significant weakness, it would not surprise me, but we just don't know where things are going to go. So for now, we're defensive. We're going to continue to be defensive. Do not rule out, mind you, seeing a short-term pop in the market. We never know what would cause that to happen, but make no mistake, it will happen. This market, as far as I'm concerned, is very oversold. We're long overdue for some type of increase in the market. The question is going to be, will that be a sustainable increase or more of just a short-term increase? My better guess, based on what I'm seeing right now, is that would be more of a short-term pop. Might we get even more defensive if that opportunity presented itself? I wouldn't rule it out. It's quite possible. But again, getting overly defensive, going all the way down to zero, creates its own risks as well. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and unmute everybody. Let's make sure I'm pressing the right button here. Okay, I went ahead and unmuted everybody. If anybody would like to go ahead and answer a question, I apologize if hopefully people won't be speaking over each other. But if anybody would like to go ahead and ask me a question, feel free.
This is Rebecca.
Rebecca.
Hi. I just want to make sure that I heard you right, that since 2009, the Dow went up 75%, 75%?
Yeah, since the bottom of 2009, correct. Since March of 2009.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it is.
Okay. Thank you. That's all my questions for the time being.
Sure thing. What other questions are out there?
Jonathan, it's Josh.
Hey, Josh.
All right, right now, we're looking at another wild day. I mean, we're down 341 points.
Yep.
It's nerve-wracking.
Of course it is. It is.
Just sit tight, right?
No, we're not sitting tight.
I mean, when I say sit tight, you're doing what you're doing, and it's the right way to go.
I sure think it is.
Okay.
Again, got more defensive in June, got more defensive on Friday. We actually had the intention of being more defensive on Wednesday, which was the day before the big decline. I ended up making the move on Friday. This is what happened on Wednesday, by the way. Let me just share with everybody what occurred on Wednesday during the market session. The market for a majority of the day on Wednesday was negative. We were down triple digits for most of the day. The market towards the latter part of the day in trade, in the last couple of hours, we had a huge recovery in the market. We ended up closing slightly higher on the day. Normally, when you see a reversal like that in the market, when it was down really far and it comes up that much and it happens towards the end of trading and it does that into the close, that is normally a bullish sign for the following day. So my intention, believe it or not, was to, with the trades I made on Friday, was to make those trades on Wednesday. When we saw the market begin to recover, we went ahead and held back, and he said, no, let's go ahead and wait to see how this thing unfolds on Thursday, because more often than not, what occurred Wednesday afternoon is very bullish. Obviously, we know what happened Thursday. That was ugly. We got that small little tiny bounce on Friday, which presented a somewhat better opportunity to go ahead and get more defensive, which is why we ended up making it on Friday. But no, the agenda here and the game plan here is not to sit tight. It's to be nimble. It's to be tactical. It's to get more defensive when the indicators that we follow are deteriorating, which they have been for a couple of months. But like I said before, there is risk associated with going all cash, because while you will avoid declines in the market during that time, assuming the market continues to decline, you will also be avoiding any kind of increase when that unfolds. And it's only going to be in hindsight that you'll know if it's a legitimate uptick or if it's just what's called in our world a dead cat bounce. So having a little bit of money on the equity side, I think, is still okay. Again, having roughly 30% in equities, and some of you are even less than that, a few of you are a little bit more than that, is a very defensive place to be. But again, I'm not going to rule out knocking off another 5 or 10% on the equities, on the equity side. But doing so when the market has seen this kind of selling pressure and after a day like this, remember, the market's like a rubber band, and I've had these conversations with virtually all of you over the past 3 years. Because I say these, I have these comments when the market goes up and when it goes down. The market's like a rubber band. When you stretch it too far in one direction or another, it's going to have a tendency, at least in a short term, to snap back a little bit. So we need to be prepared to see some kind of technical snapback in the market in the not too distant future. This is very unusual to see the market decline the way it has over the past 2 weeks. But again, long and short of this, I'm still more bearish than I am bullish.
Let me continue, if I can, with how much, is there any way to tell how much of these trades are literally computer-generated as opposed to trades, for example, that you, Jonathan, would make a mental decision to do this? Obviously, we all know that the value of these companies don't change in the wild range that the stock values are changing. Are some of these things just absolutely triggered automatically?
A lot of it is. Well, I don't, you know, that's unfair. I can't say a lot. But yes, certainly there are a lot of volatility that you see out there is computer generated, because there are many firms out there that will have specific indicators. We follow fundamental indicators here and technical indicators here. Prior to 2008, it was primarily fundamental indicators. Over the past 2.5 years, it's really been equal between fundamentals and technicals. There are many traders out there that only look at fundamentals still, and there are many traders out there that only look at technicals still. Many of the traders that just follow technicals will have specific buy and sell orders placed once the market hits a certain place. So if the market were to cross over a trend line or hit some type of a moving average, it will automatically generate a buy and a sell. And there is just so much activity out there today. You have such incredibly powerful computers out there today that, yes, it does have a tendency to drive up volatility, but I don't know to what degree it is.
Just curious. Thank you.
Jonathan, when will we know, Jim Howell here.
Yeah, Jim.
When will we know what trades you generated on Friday as far as becoming more defensive, you said?
Oh, yeah. You'll end up knowing it within, 5 days or so, whenever the confirmation gets to you. But I'm going to be calling you anyway, Jim, because I know you spoke with Michelle a little bit earlier.
Right.
But, yeah, you and I are going to be talking anyway, either this afternoon or sometime tomorrow.
That'll be good. Thank you very much.
You bet.
Hey, Jonathan, it's Bert.
Hey, Bert, how are you?
Good, thanks. Just curious.
Yeah.
At what point does it have to get to before you pull it all out?
Before I pull it all out? I wouldn't anticipate that happening. You know, like I said, another 5 to 10%. Again, let's keep it in perspective to a certain degree. The S&P 500 year-to-date, including today, is down 8%. That's not a wonderful feeling to be through, I know, but I don't know exactly everybody on this call right now, but I would venture to guess that there's not one person on this call that's down anywhere close to that year-to-date. And again, keep in mind that when you pull it all out, you're guessing when that right time would be to get out, when that right time would be to get back in. Some of you might be wondering, well, John, aren't you kind of making that guess right now by getting more defensive? Yeah, to a certain degree, that's true. But we're following a specific discipline here, looking at fundamentals and technicals. And if you go over the top, if you go overboard by getting overly conservative, there will be a point, there will absolutely be a point when this market rebounds that you're going to be sitting on the sideline during that time. It's only going to be after a few hundred points or maybe even a couple of thousand points where then the feeling of, okay, now we can get back in. But that's going to be after the fact. So being defensive in this environment, I think, is the right way to go. Being in all cash, though, that carries its own set of risks as well. And I've talked about this with virtually all of you on the phone. We're human. What we see today, what we see over the past couple of years, when we see it and we're living through it, we have a tendency to believe that this is the way it's going to be for the foreseeable future. We can't possibly see how this is going to turn around. Well, just 5 months ago, I know that there were a couple of people on the phone that were probably looking at me thinking the exact opposite of, John, why aren't we more aggressive? Market's up 6%, man. Market last year was up 12. Well, it was up 12. It all came at the end of the year. Virtually all of it came as a result of QE2. But the feeling at the time was when things were going up, it's as though it's always going to keep going up. And that's not the case. Just like it is right now, the market's going down. It's been going down for 2 weeks. The news is so bad. It's not going to last forever. It eventually will stabilize. And again, when it does and we see that market go up, I suspect I'll be one or two people on the phone right now that says, John, why aren't we more aggressive? So I think the positioning we have right now is appropriate. Otherwise, I would have made some different changes.
John, when I asked you if we should just sit tight, I wasn't talking – this is Josh. I wasn't talking about you. I know what you're doing. It's me sitting tight and letting you do what you do so well.
Yeah.
Fair enough?
Fair enough. Okay. Sit tight. You know, look, all of you on the phone, first of all, I appreciate all of you guys phoning in. And you guys know I appreciate your trust and support and your confidence. Part of our mission statement is to allow you to achieve financial peace of mind. All of these things that you see out there, everything with the news and Bloomberg and CNBC and the radio, you know, please just try as much as you can to not let it affect you guys day to day. There's so much noise out there in the system. You've entrusted us with your wealth, with managing your retirement assets. We are doing the job certainly to the best of our ability, always trying to keep a keen eye to downside protection, which oftentimes will mean giving up a little bit on the upside. But sleep at night. Sleep at night knowing that this is all we're doing over here. We're always watching this stuff. I read more economic reports than you can possibly imagine. And I see it from both sides of the debate, the bear side and the bull side. And when I see things begin to deteriorate and we get more defensive, hopefully that will allow you to sleep at night. When we get a little bit more offensive, it's only because we've been given some indicators, whether it be a fundamental or technical or both, that shows, okay, let's go ahead and take on a little bit more risk at this juncture. But I will always have a keen eye to downside protection, and hopefully that will allow all of you guys to sleep at night, not worry about all this stuff. At the end of the day, look, we can't control it. I can't control the market, unfortunately. I wish I could. I wish I had that crystal ball where that bell rings. But I don't have it. Nobody has it. Many of you might remember in the late 90s, Warren Buffett was being criticized in the late 90s. We're going back 12, 13 years ago. That, you know, the old man has lost it. He must not know what he does anymore. You know, the investing world has changed, man. It's all about eyeballs. It's all about .com. Well, I think Warren Buffett had the last laugh. Now, at the time, Warren Buffett didn't know how much more tech stocks were going to go up, but eventually he was proven right. He didn't know where things were going to go. In October of 08, he made the claim he's getting more aggressive. He's buying U.S. Well, at the time, people were looking at that saying, okay, well, you know, we'll see what happens. Many people don't remember. In December and part of November of 08, after Obama won the election, we had a 20% rally in the market. Very few people remember that. There was more optimism. People were thinking the worst is over. Then he got inaugurated. And boy, did we go on a market dive that was nasty. And that led to the March 09 bottom. So during that time, people were looking back at Warren Buffett's comments saying, well, Warren Buffett's supposed to be the smartest investor out there. He didn't know. Nobody knows where the markets are going to go. We have a discipline here that we follow every day, looking at fundamentals and technicals. We'll continue to employ that discipline. We won't always get it right. It won't always be the discipline that's in favor at that particular time, but I would always rather err on the side of caution and protect your principal during periods of uncertainty. And that's what we're doing now, and that's what we're going to continue to do.
John, as you make these adjustments,
yeah.
when you put in a trade, say on a mutual fund that we hold, we generically, how
yep.
quickly does that trade take place?
4 o'clock that afternoon. Mutual funds trade at the close of business each day. ETFs trade like a stock. So ETFs are a basket of securities just like a mutual fund, but they trade like a stock. So I could put a trade order in at noon for an ETF, and it will be executed, well, should be executed at noon, assuming there's somebody out there willing to buy it. You know, and during the flash crash last year, again, a lot of people are already forgetting the flash crash. You know, we went down over 1,000 points.
Oh, yes.
That day. And, you know, a lot of people that owned ETFs got really, really burned. And I'm, by the way, I'm not opposed to ETFs. I'm not opposed, you know, whatever financial instrument I think is the best is what we're going to use. But a lot of people really, really got hurt owning ETFs during that flash crash. A lot of people got stopped out of their holding. And a lot of people saw their ETFs go down 50, 60, 70% that day. So, you know, it can get pretty nasty. But the mutual fund trades are always executed at the close of business that day, regardless of the time of day in which they're submitted. What other questions?
Hey, Jonathan, it's Bert again. I just want you to know I sleep all right. It was just a generic question of does it ever get to that point?
Yeah, Bert, look, I can tell you this, that having this conversation on August the 8th, if we're having this conversation on September the 8th and the S&P is back down to 800, of course, I'm going to look the answer here saying, yeah, I wish we had gone all cash in hindsight. But we just don't know what's going to happen. Again, I am still more bearish than I am bullish. But the market is going to do things that will just confound people. And I've said this quote a million times. I'll say it again. The market is going to do everything it can to prove the greatest number of people wrong at any given time. So maybe the market goes down more from here. I still think over the short to intermediate term, we're going to see some weakness in the market, but we can very, very likely see a short-term pop. Anybody remember on the phone in October of 08, by the way? We had about a day and a half worth of I think it was like a Friday to a Monday is my recollection, where the market went up 10%. It was about a day and a half worth of trading, and it was just a huge spike up in the market. It was short-lived, mind you, but, you know, the market had sold off, goodness, I think 20-25%, and we had that one day of trading that was just phenomenal. I think we were up like 800-900 points or so in about a day and a half. So, you know, that type of a pop can happen at any time. You don't know what will cause it. It looks like the market is selling off even more right now. But that's okay. It's okay. We're more defensive in your portfolio. We're just protecting more principal right now. We're setting ourselves up for better opportunities down the road. That's how it needs to be looked at. Money is not made in bull markets. Money is made in bear markets. It is made in bear markets when principal can be protected. Imagine if I could turn back the hands of time, of course I would. Imagine had we been in 2008, down not quite as much. And then we were able to go ahead and deploy all that capital in March of 09. My goodness. I mean, forget these averages of 6, 8, 9, 10% returns. They would have been well into double digits. So market volatility is normal. We're in somewhat unprecedented times. But I can assure you, though, we are watching everything every day.
I think that was my point, is just the unprecedented times that everyone's
in. Of course it is. And it was, you know, I got into this. It's been almost 20 years. I was part of an unprecedented bull market in the 90s and an unprecedented bear market in 2000, 2001, 2002. And believe it or not, the increase that we saw in the middle part of the decade, Bert, was somewhat unprecedented as well. It was unprecedented from the standpoint that that was
one of the least volatile periods of investing in the history of our market. Now, we only know that, of course, in hindsight. But when we look back, that four-year period or so was not volatile at all. So that was somewhat unprecedented because I think we got somewhat of a false sense of security. Then, of course, we went through 2008, which was unprecedented. I think that the slowdown we're seeing right now, I don't think it's unprecedented at all, what we're seeing right now. This, to me, is what we should be coming to expect. This is what I've been talking about since 2008, that new normal. Unusually high unemployment, slower growth, probably more recessions a little bit more often. You know, what's somewhat unprecedented is that Congress couldn't get their act together a few months ago and pass the debt ceiling or come up with some type of compromise to address that issue. That is most certainly unprecedented, unfortunately. But, you know, look, we've got too much debt in the system. That's what all this comes back to. It all comes back to debt. It's been brewing for 30 years, and we're paying the price for it now. We just got to get the political leaders out there in Washington to make the hard choices, and we got to get the American people to understand that the hard choices are going to have to be made one way or another. Either we're going to do it ourselves or the market's going to do it for us a few years out.
Hey, Jonathan, just one question. Is there a certain percentage that we should have our money in some kind of cash reserves?
Who is this?
This is Sean Awan.
Hey, Sean. I mean, certainly from just a pure financial planning standpoint, Sean, you know, having anywhere from 3 to 6 months of living expenses just in pure cash reserves would certainly be prudent. Now, sometimes depending on the situation, I might gravitate more towards having a client having 3 months or 6 months. So for somebody who has disability insurance, they have a substantial investment nest egg already, they're in good health, and if they are married and they have a working spouse, you could probably get away with 3 months or so of living expenses. If you're single, don't really have any disability insurance, don't really have other investments elsewhere, really need to have at least 6 months worth of cash reserves on hand. But I think in this environment, if you were asking me something outside of cash reserves and more specifically just on the pure investment side, you know, in this climate right now, no matter how aggressive somebody is, I wouldn't have more than 60% allocated towards equity. Nobody, by the way, I don't think virtually nobody on this call has that if you're a client of mine. But I think if somebody wants to be, you know, pretty aggressive at this point, but maybe take a couple of toes out of the pool, you know, about 40% or so in cash and bonds would be reasonable.
Thank you.
Sure. What other questions are out there? Does that mean all these questions I asked myself are all the ones y'all were thinking?
Yep.
Unless you have a crystal ball.
I do not, unfortunately, but we do have a discipline here, and we're following it. Well, listen, guys, this call is being recorded. If anybody has any other questions, we're here. Please call, email. If you have other friends and family members that you think would like a second opinion on what they're doing on their investments, feel free to pass along the callback information. Shell's going to be sending out that email as soon as we get it up on the website. Hopefully it will be, it's possible today, most likely probably sometime tomorrow until we actually get it up there. But feel free to pass this information along. You know, anybody that you know that's looking for proactive communication, proactive investment management, we'd be happy to talk to anybody that you think we might be able to help. Again, thank you very much for your time this afternoon. Thanks again for your trust, your loyalty, and we'll continue to do what we think, obviously, is the right thing for you guys and look out for your best interest.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Hey, guys. Bye-bye.